Thank you, Jesus. Seated.
All right, since I'm preaching, I get to pick songs that go along with my messages, and tonight, if you read in advance, you noticed that there was a lot of questions. And I thought it went perfectly with the song that was from our missions conference at the beginning of COVID, Only a Holy God. And I think it goes along perfectly. So if you could follow along with the words, that would be awesome, or at least hear it from us. Hopefully the kids will do well.
Commands all the hosts of heaven. Who else could make every king bow down? Who else can whisper and darkness tremble? Only a holy God. Come and behold him, the
over to Job chapter 38, that would be absolutely wonderful. Job chapter 38. We're going to try to cover a couple of chapters here tonight. And again, it goes right along with that song, Only a Holy God. Because Job has asked so many times, God, just come and, or just let me talk to you. Let me plead my case before you. Let me ask you all these questions. And he questioned a lot about what God had done or what he thought he had done towards him. And yet you get into this in Job chapter 38, you find that God finally, after months, responds. And he responds in a very unique fashion that might be a difficult thing for us to try to comprehend. But by the time you get into chapter 40, Job makes a response to God. And not one out of arrogance, pride, but out of humility. And I would just say that that should be our response, is humility. By the end, there will be humility and repentance. And that should be also our response. So as we get into this here tonight, I've titled this, I Am Vile. Have you ever gotten up in the morning and told yourself that? Have you ever, maybe after you've sinned in a major way, you've done something that you know is wrong, and the response afterwards is, I can't believe I did something like that. I can't believe that I dwelled on that for that long. I can't believe that I let that consume me. Have you ever felt like you were worthless? Have you ever felt like you were nothing? And this is kind of where he comes to at the point when God starts asking him a load of questions. And you notice that when the Pharisees and the Sadducees came at Jesus, when Jesus was on this earth, and they started attacking him for things that they thought he was being a sinner and blasphemous about, and the son of Belial, and all these other things, you know how he responded? A lot of times he responded with questions. And so I think that's a God thing. Instead of just attack, it's more of, let me get you to reflect on this for a moment. Let me get you to ponder, to think about where we are, who you are, who I am, in the midst of all of this. So as we get into Job chapter 38, we'll see here in verse 1 through 3. It says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. Now, I could probably stay in the first three verses for a super long time, but I'm trying to stay away from that, okay? Because in those first three verses, you will find that our culture despises a few things in that. Okay, but one thing that I want you to think about in verse number one, God comes to Job and speaks through a storm. What was the thing that killed his children? A storm. Oh, a huge, mighty wind that came through and knocked down the house. And here it is. Another storm coming through. Can you imagine? As Elihu's talking about how God is in charge of all the weather, and all of a sudden this storm starts coming through, he might be thinking about who God is, but then he also might be thinking of, oh no, not again. Has that ever happened to you before where certain things just trigger certain memories? Maybe it's by singing a certain hymn. Maybe it'll go back to, oh, that was my parents' favorite hymn. Or I remember when I heard that for the first time. Or maybe when it's a certain pastor that comes through. When I mention the Pastor Cook, some of you perk up. Others have no idea who that guy is, okay? But some of you perk up because he was somebody that was very influential here and for you all and for this church. And so some things just kind of perk up, and it brings you back to all these memories, and hopefully you will not be focusing on all those memories during this entire message. But as you get into this, certain things just trigger memories. And I can only imagine that this would trigger this horrific nightmare for Joe. But then also, it would be making that depiction of God and his control over everything come true. As far as this is who our God is. This is his majesty. But as you go through there, just think about this. What a tragedy. Something that was used as a tragedy in Job's life became a tool that God spoke through and to get Job's attention. To get him to a point where he concludes himself as being vile. But then he goes into repentance. Has there ever been a moment in your life, COVID, where a tragedy hit, messed up everything, and yet God taught you something magnificent through it? Beyond COVID, beyond what's going on us around, you've probably got stories upon stories of how God has used something very tragic in your life in order to teach you, in order to bring you closer to him, in order to show you how big and mighty he is. If you go into verse 2, it says, "Who is he that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge?" Many commentators would state that he's talking about Elihu right now. But according to verse 1, he's not. He came to speak to Job. And so he's saying, listen, here it is. There's this counsel that's been darkened. There's a misunderstanding. You don't have all of the knowledge here. Who is this? And then he goes into verse 3. He says, "Gird up now thy loins." Now, you don't really hear anybody saying something like that nowadays, okay? But when you get that depiction in the KJV, it's actually where they would take their garments and they would grab it up and they would tuck it into their belt so that they could actually run, so they could get to work. Because it's a little bit hard to be able to get things done with this long garment around and you're tripping up all over it. And what he's saying here, he says, now gird up now thy loins. Now, nowadays, let's put it into some modern lingo here, okay? If you're from the Midwest, pick up your britches, right? I told Barry that, and he just looked at me really weird. But has anybody ever heard that slang, that Midwestern slang here? Pick up your britches. Why? Well, have you ever noticed that sometimes when you go into different areas that there's pants that are like way down here? Okay? I'm not sure why. Did you know that I don't know if they could still do this, but at one point you could buy pants that had boxers sewn into them, so it wasn't actually your boxers, it was part of the pants. And you could actually look like you got the saggy britches, right? You know what my mom always told me when I tried to do that when I was younger? Pull up your britches. Okay? Otherwise they might go the opposite direction. But then have you ever seen somebody try to run with their pants hanging down low? I mean, they have to. Have you ever seen somebody walk like that? Okay? They have to spread their legs out like this, and they have to walk. And it's uncomfortable. They probably get in a workout in their thighs. That's the only thing that I see that's positive about it. But there's no way. Can you imagine running like that? You know, it's like a penguin, okay? Now I look like an idiot in front of all of you. But I'm trying to show you what he's trying. Okay, now gird up all of that garment. Let's get to work. Let's see what needs to be done. And what did he say? Be a man. Those three words are cuss words. Now, you could say anything else you want in our culture, In fact, it amazes me what people say nowadays. But those three words, be a man, is like cuss words. But as a boy, I always looked up to that as I need to be strong here. I need to be what my parents have trained me to be, and to be a leader, and to work hard, and to put some sweat to the brow. Be a man. Be that a pace setter for my marriage. Okay? My wife is tough. And she could probably beat up a lot of boys. I tell you what, a lot of grown men she could probably beat up. Okay? She's got Carell in her. And if you've ever met her parents, you'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, okay. Northern Wisconsin, okay, that's what it's like. All right, but listen, I lead my family, and she supports, which is a very important role, by the way. She is a helpmeet. But I'm out in front taking the hits. If somebody broke through my front door, I'm not sending my wife out to protect me. I get up. And if I don't, she will beat me up to get me out the door, right? Okay? Taylor, get up. There's a noise. Now I have a security camera, so I could just check that. I could cheat now. When you get your vehicle gotten into a couple times, you tend to, you know, beef up some security. But anyway, be a man. It's not time to cower. It's time to own up to the decisions that you have made, to the words that you have said, not to back away in this moment, but this is what he's calling Job to do. He's saying, now gird up your loins. It's time to get to work. You said all of these things. Now I'm going to respond to you. We're going to see how you respond to me after I'm done. This is where God's going with this. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. You will have a response. You will hear me out. Don't back away from this now. You know how many times Job's been crying out? Now he gets his chance. As you get into what goes on next, God is going to ask him a load of questions that's going to be very representative of what Elihu stated. And you know, I'd like to point out this again. Sometimes God puts people in our lives to speak truth into our lives that might be difficult to hear, to prepare us for when he speaks. It's to get us to open up our ears, to get us to pay attention, to perk up. Kind of like the deer that Pastor did not shoot yesterday. They perked up their ears and they ran the opposite direction. I'm sorry. Or they were staying in their homes because they were scared of COVID, I guess. Yeah, anyway, good excuse. I've never heard that one before. I guess it's a new one. But anyway, you say they perk up and they get the attention here, and somebody was used of God, Elihu in particular, to get Job's attention, to prepare him. So as we get into this, all of these onslaught of questions, God moves on in point number one, and that's creation. He talks about the beauty of creation. You want to know some of the ways that you can get people's attention about how wonderful our God is? Point them to creation. As a Christian, I can't understand the world existing any other way except for God creating it. It only makes sense like that. If you don't want to believe in God, then you'll make up a lot of weird things in order to try to compensate. And then those lies keep building. Has anybody ever tried to lie to you and then you've caught them in that lie and then they build another lie on top of that and try to cover it up and then it just keeps going and then pretty soon they're so deep in it that they believe this junk? That's what evolution is. That's what evolution is. And so as you get into this in verse number 4, it starts off here. And the question that would overarch the verses 4 through 7 would be, where were you when I set up the foundations of the world? It says there, where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Where were you? Obviously, Job wasn't there. He wasn't there when God created it, because even Adam and Eve weren't there when God was creating the world. Who hath laid the measures thereof? If thou knowest, or who has stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof? Now the cornerstone would be the most influential foundational block of what is being built. Without that, everything else would get messed up. If you didn't set the cornerstone correctly, everything else would be like a domino effect of mess up. And yet he's saying here, who laid the cornerstone? Now, is there actually a cornerstone in the universe somewhere? Well, no, he's giving a depiction. It's a picture. He's saying, who set it? Who started it? Who laid the foundation? Who was there at the very beginning? It says there, it goes on, it says, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Who's the sons of God? Well, in this moment, it's talking about the angels. And the angels, as they were singing and praising God as he created the universe, God is just backing Job up and saying, where were you when everything started? Oh, you weren't in existence. In fact, the only thing about you that was in existence was a thought of God knowing who Job would be. That's it. That's it. God knew and formed. As you go into verse 8, we start talking about something different here. We start talking about the seas. And it goes on and it says, or who shut up the sea with doors when it brake forth as if it had issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud the garment thereof, the thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors, and said, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. You say, well, where did God put the bars and the doors? Again, it's just a picture. Now, how many of you are able to, let's take a 5-gallon bucket and we'll just have Jerry, you know, volunteer for this because he's pretty good at what he does, right? And we'll take this 5-gallon bucket and I'm going to dump it on him, okay? That'll be exciting. Now your job, because you're very skilled, is to catch all of it. You say, that's dumb. He can't do that. As skilled as he may be, he can't do that. What if we got like 5 guys together and dumped a bucket of water on them? Hey, can you hold? No. Now, not too long ago, there was a dam in Michigan. I don't know if you heard about in Midland area. There was a dam that actually broke loose and flooded a huge area. And the reason being is that they were trying to save some freshwater mussels or something like that, so they weren't fixing it. I don't quite understand it all. But anyway, the dam couldn't hold the water because the water was so powerful and it went through and destroyed so much. Say, what are you getting at? The fact of the matter is that God said, who created the seas and then stopped it wherever it needed to go and to end? Where was the start? Where was the end? How did it all work? Oh, wait a minute. Who created the land and the seas? God did. And he's the only one that has the control over it to stop it and to control it. We don't have that kind of power. Even when we're America, we can do anything. And yet, our contraptions still fail. As we get into this, he's saying, okay, who was it that understood and could control all of the bodies of water? It goes on in verse 12 through 15. It says, hast thou commanded the morning since thy days, and caused the dayspring to know his place? Now, how many of you would love to control when the morning starts and ends? Hold on. I don't want to wake up just yet. Just keep it dark. Anybody ever tried to do that? I mean, you wanted to emotionally. I am very convincing whenever my alarm clock goes off. Oh, yeah, 15 more minutes. And then you look up and there's the sun. Oh, sun, go back down. Guess what? When I wave my hands, nothing happens. You know that if God was to try and stop the sun, it would happen. And in fact, it did in the Old Testament. When they asked for a little bit longer to be able to defeat this enemy, guess what? Stood still. Who was in control of that? God. It goes on, it says in verse 13, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth, that the wicked might be shaken out of it. And what is it going on there? It's saying that, you know, whenever the daylight comes up, then all the wicked scatter. Why? Because they want to do things in darkness. And it goes on, and it is turned as clay to the seal, and they stand as a garment. And from the wicked their light is withholden, and the high arm shall be broken. Now, during the night, you really can't see a lot of the landscape. It's not really, you can't see all the form, but when that daylight comes up, then you see, just as somebody presses a seal into clay and how it forms whatever the seal is, it's just how God created the landscape and the beauty that's there. And he's saying, so who's created the day and the night? And do you command that, Job? Obviously, the answer is no. Verse 16, it starts off a new one. It goes, hast thou entered into the springs of the sea, or hast thou walked in the search of the depths? Have the gates of death been opened unto thee? Or hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death? Hast thou perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare if thou knowest it all. Where is the way where light dwelleth? And as for darkness, where is the place thereof? Where does it end? Where does it begin? That thou shouldest take it to the bound thereof, and that thou shouldest know the paths to the house thereof. Knowest thou it because thou wast then born, or because the number of thy days is great? Were you there? Do you know all of this because of your old age here? Obviously not. What is he trying to get at? Have you been everywhere? Do you know everything? Do you know the depths of the sea? Do you know the ends of the earth? How many of you like to travel? Okay, I like to travel. I love to travel. But there is no possible way for me to be everywhere at once. That'd be really cool. I would get a lot done. And yet, I can't. I don't have the means to be able to do something like that. I am not the omni-trifecta, as we talked about in a previous sermon. I can't be everywhere at once, and yet, who is? God. So he's saying, we don't even know. You know, we still don't know everything that's around this world. We still haven't been to the deepest, darkest parts of the ocean and the forests, you know, the what's there. I mean, they still haven't found Sasquatch. Where's he at? Okay. You know, I mean, seriously, how do we know that there's no more dragons? Oh, that's a question for a later sermon, right? How do we know that there's not more dinosaurs? Well, some of the alligators that I've seen kind of look as big as dinosaurs. I mean, seriously, that's why I don't move to Florida, right? But as you get into that, he's saying, so have you been everywhere? Can you see everything? What is he trying to get them to? He's trying to get them to a point where, Job, you don't know everything. So how can you come to me and tell me what my job is? And what my purpose is, right? We still got more to go. As you go into verse 22, it says, hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow? I don't really believe that question. Treasures of the snow? Oh. Pastor's already looking at snow blowers, by the way. And it was snowing up in Michigan today. And we got to go to that this week. Horrible. The treasures of the snow. Do we understand every aspect of that? Or hast thou seen the treasures of the hail? Most of us would not say that there's treasures in hail. All it is damage. But yet he says there's treasures. Which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war. By what way is the light parted, which scattereth the east wind upon the earth? Who hath divided a water course for the overflowing of waters, or a way of the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth? Now, Job, do you understand all of the seasons and the weather, and do you have control over that, and do you tell it where to go and where not to go? And I mean, one of the jobs for us is to take care of the earth, isn't it? Now, I don't hug trees, but I also don't throw out trash all the time, anytime, okay? Throw it out all over the roads. You know, it kind of bothers me. Okay, in the sense of people just dumping their trash everywhere. I mean, people live here, for crying out loud. Try to take care of what God's given you. We're supposed to be good stewards of that, right? And yet, can we take care of every aspect of the earth and making sure that everything has the correct amount of water? And he says there, here he is, do you cause rain where no man is? No. But who does? God does. So that he can make sure that the flowers do grow and that we have what we need. If there weren't plants, guess who would be dying? Us. We need what plants produce. We need that. And God takes care of that. It's kind of like, when have you ever heard that statement? If a tree falls in a forest and nobody's around to see it, does it make a sound? Yes. It still makes a sound. Now, if nobody's there on certain parts of the earth, does that mean that God doesn't take care of it? God takes care of the whole entire thing. Everything exists by him. Saying, well, these are all duh comments. I mean, you're stating obvious things. Well, it's kind of like Thanksgiving. We reserve Thanksgiving for the day of Thanksgiving. Because all of a sudden, I got to give thanks really quick. Hurry up. Get them all out. Dad told me to give thanks for something. I thank God for my family and my house. Do you ever remember doing that? Somebody asked you to give thanks, and we just give the generalized statements because we really don't think about it? What's God doing? He's laying out all of the things that we really don't think about because it's not right in front of our face. You know the honey-do list of there's something that you need to get done, but it's not in front of your face, and then your wife wonders why you're not getting it done? It's because I don't see it. So she brings that in front of my face to make sure that I do see that so I can get it done, right? We don't have everything in this universe's existence right in front of our face for us to take and appreciate all that God actually does. This is how magnificent our God is. As you go on in verse 28, it says, "Hath the rain a father? Or who hath begotten the drops of dew?" So that just kind of sounds weird. Rain doesn't have parents. Dew doesn't have parents. What is he saying? The picture is, who created this? God did. Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven who has gendered it? Verse 30, "The waters are hid as with a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen." So who created all this? Who is the magnificent creator? You go into verse 31, and you start seeing here, "Canst thou bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou bring forth Maseroth in his season, or canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons? Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth?" Who's in control of all the constellations, all the stars, all the planets? Who formed them? God did. God did. And if you aren't amazed at the existence of the stars, maybe you should back up for a moment and go outside and actually look up. Maybe you should go and invest in a Black Friday Menards $25 telescope, because they always have them. I don't know why Menards always comes up with telescopes during Black Friday, but yet they always have the most unique things that they give out. So go find a telescope for really cheap, and then actually look up into the stars and examine what's all around you. Who controls all of that? Who made it all happen? God did. God did. Not the aliens. By the way, I don't believe that there's aliens. Otherwise, it would have been in the Bible, okay? All right? There's a whole lot of gab about that, and there's life on Mars or something like that, and all this jazz, okay? God is in control of all of that. As you go on in verse 34, it says, "Canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds that abundance of waters may cover thee? Canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are? Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts, or who hath given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds in wisdom, or who can stay the bottles of heaven? When the dust groweth into hardness and the clods cleave fast together, wilt thou hunt the prey for the lion?" Now I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. And so as you get into verses 34 and 38, he goes through and he's talking about, do you speak and the weather answers? Guess who does that? Jesus. He's the only one that in the midst of the storm, as much as we try to do it, and in our frantic anxiety when a tornado is coming through, we want to put up our hands and say, "Peace, be still." Guess what? Nothing happens. We just get whisked away. But Jesus can wake up out of a sleep and say, "Peace, be still," and they obey. Are you amazed yet? First of all, I'm amazed that he can wake up out of a sleep and consider what's going on around him. Right? How many of you, it takes you a little bit to wake up out of a nap? I don't take a nap on Sunday afternoon. Otherwise, I would be like a zombie. What's going on around here? But Jesus wakes up, "Peace be still," and it obeys. This is how magnificent our God is. As you go on, it talks about our second point, the animals. You say, aren't they a part of creation? Well, yes, they are, but it gets a little bit more intent on just describing some of these animals. It goes on in verse 39, it says, "Wilt thou hunt the prey for the lion?" Obviously not. I don't mess with lions. I don't go and hunt down something and then bring it to a lion and say, "Good boy, eat, munch up. Let me know if you need anything else." I don't do that. I look from behind a cage here, okay? The lion must be caged up. That's as close as I'll get. And, I mean, have you ever seen some of the videos of a lion creeping up on some person, some kid that's got his back to the glass and tries to jump on that cage? Man, I don't want to get anywhere close. But do we do that? No, Job doesn't do that. It says, "Or fill the appetite of the young lions when they couch in their dens and abide in the covert to lie in wait, who provideth for the raven his food. When his young ones cry unto God, they wander for lack of meat." Who provides for the animals when they need to eat? God does. There are cats that roam around my house all the time. Do I stop, go to Walmart, get a bag of cat food, come back and say, "Oh, I have to take care of you, cat. I have to take care of you, otherwise you will starve"? No, I do not. Otherwise, they will want to come back to my door and I'll have to keep paying for that cat food. You know what I do? Go get them. There's mice around here. Go get them before they come into my house. Why? Because God provided that for the cat to be able to eat. God provided animals for certain prey. I mean, the lions, they go out and they catch their prey and they eat it. And you say, "That's gross." That's how God created it to be. God provides for them. It kind of goes back to that Matthew passage where it says, "You know what? I take care of the birds. I make sure that they don't go up and store in barns. They're taken care of. And yet, how much more do I care for you than these animals?" Do you remember that passage? He cares for us much more, and he provides for all of these, saying this is God providing, making sure that they have what they need. Going on in chapter 39, it goes in verses 1 through 4, "Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth, or canst thou mark when the hinds do calve? Canst thou number the months that they fulfill, or knowest thou the time when they bring forth? They bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones, they cast out their sorrows, their young ones are in good liking, they grow up with corn, they go forth and return not unto them." Saying, have you chased around the goats and watched whenever they have their young? Or these, the deer that are going around, these hinds? You say, "Well, what is that talking about?" Well, it could be talking about I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but the ibex, okay? It's a type of a goat that has these crazy looking horns. I would not want to get in a fight with it. But I guess it goes and hides whenever it's giving birth to another ibex. He's saying, are you going around and chasing and making sure that all of them are giving birth the correct manner? Make sure that they're all taken care of? No, who does that? God. God created them to be certain ways so that they would survive. It goes on and says in verse 5, it says, "So who hath sent out the wild donkey free, or who hath loosed the bands of the wild donkey? Whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwellings. He scorneth the multitude of the city, neither regardeth the crying of the driver or the master. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searcheth after every green thing." He's saying, who's in control of all of this? The wild donkeys. Who's managing all of this? Not you, Job. They're wild. You didn't tame them. They have the pastures. They're not worried about their master making sure that they're taking their burden along and making sure that they're doing what they're told. They go off and they do their own thing as God made them to be. Now, verse 9, this is the verse that you all have been waiting for. Will the unicorn be willing to serve thee or abide by thy crib? Pastor talked about a unicorn back a long time ago, and he said there's no such thing as unicorns. And all of you cried out behind your screen because we were we were still at home, right? All of you, yes, there's unicorns. They're in the Bible. It's right there. I saw so many of you put on references of trying to prove him wrong because you thought you were smarter than him, right? And you say, what is this? This is that fantasy unicorn, the white horse with the horn, and right? No, it's not. And it's not the narwhal either. It doesn't really make sense for it to be a narwhal. Okay, is it the rhino? Well, it doesn't really make sense a whole lot for that either. They think that this is an auroch, which in that area, I believe that it's like a wild oxen that they had a really hard time taming. But they've actually, a lot of them have been wiped out since then. There's some of them that are still living in different areas. But this is what it's talking about. It's not that fantasy unicorn. All of a sudden, my daughter, oh, it's a unicorn. Oh, no, this is a little bit different, okay? All right, what is this? Will the unicorn be willing to serve thee or abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the unicorn with his band in the furrow, or will he harrow the valleys after thee? Will thou trust him because his strength is great, or wilt thou leave thy labor to him? Wilt thou believe him? And that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn, these wild oxen? Will you trust them to do what you tell them to do? No, they're not tame. And yet God, he's made them to be what they are. You go in verse 13, gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacocks. That brings back memories. We had a family up in Michigan that had peacocks. And the father came up to me in between Sunday school and the morning service, and he says, I have to go. It's like, well, what's wrong? He says, the peacock got out of the cage. It's like, that is the first time I have ever heard that excuse for trying to get out of a service. But there was a snowstorm that was coming in, and it was up on the top of a tree. I don't understand, okay? But yet, I mean, peacocks are just an absolutely beautiful bird, aren't they? And they flut their feathers and all of that, and they make those crazy noises. I mean, who made that? God. Or wings and feathers unto the ostrich, which leaveth her eggs in the earth and warmeth them in the dust and forgetteth that the foot may crush them or that the wild beast may break them. You say, what is this? Well, I guess... the ostrich, they'll actually share nests. It's kind of weird, but they put all the eggs in the nest and they brood over them, and if they don't have enough room, they just put it outside the nest. And sometimes they forget that it's there and they stomp on it. So that's weird. Their survival rate might not be also great. But when they get their anxiety up, they just stomp all over their eggs. It's weird. But it goes on, it says, she's hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Because sometimes they'll actually forget about their own eggs and go to somebody else's nest and nest there. It's weird. I was just researching it. It's just a weird bird. Her labor is in vain without fear because God hath deprived her of wisdom. Please don't ever call me an ostrich, okay? Deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. What time she lifteth up herself on high, she scorneth the horse and the rider. He said, what is talking about? This bird is weird, but yet this bird can run faster than a horse. And so you could put to shame a horse and his rider for as fast as an ostrich runs, which is again unique, but God created it to be that way? Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou clothed his neck with thunder? Canst thou make him afraid as a grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. Sometimes horses are scared of the weirdest things and yet can be so brave concerning other things. You know, a snake that comes by, I understand when it gets scared, but it'll jump. I mean, all it has to do is stomp on that snake, but yet it jumps and runs and goes crazy. And you say, who made it to be scared like this grasshopper, and yet as if it was small? And yet, it says, the glory of his nostrils is terrible. He paweth in the valley and rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth on to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear and is not affrighted, neither turneth he back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him, the glittering spear and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, ha, ha. And he smelleth the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. A horse can be afraid of something so small and act like it is small and yet be so brave as it's been trained to go into battle, despite spears and arrows and all of the other things that could kill it. Who made it like this? God did. It goes on, doth a hawk fly by thy wisdom and stretch her wings toward the south? Doth the eagle mount up at thy command and make her nest on high? She dwelleth and abideth on a rock, upon the crag of the rock, in the strong place. From thence she seeketh the prey, and her eyes behold far off. Her young ones also suck up the blood, and where the slain are, there is she. You know, birds of prey are amazing. Go and YouTube it. An eagle taking down a deer, or other large animals. Or they could see some of the smallest things on the ground from so high up, and they come down so fast and clench onto those things. And the pressure that they have in their claws is absolutely amazing. You don't want to have a fight with an eagle. But who gave it all of that? Who gave it all? All the wisdom, all the sight, all the power? God did. So what's the point? Well, he goes on into the rebuke in these next two verses. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. If you want to fight, if you want to struggle with the Almighty who's made all of these things, who has the wisdom, who has the power, who has the knowledge, who has everything that's needed in order to keep everything running, you actually want to question God? Now give me your answer. You want to shake your fist at me? Go ahead and give an answer. Your turn. Point number four is his response. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. Job, he was an upright man, and he turned away from evil. He was all these things that everybody looked up to, and yet he says this, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? Instead, I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. I have no argument. Got nothing else to say. In fact, I'm just going to do this. Wouldn't you love it if some of our politicians would know how to do that? Wouldn't that be easy to debate your spouse if they say, oh, I got nothing else? Oh. Maybe we should learn from that. And yet he knows that his God is so much bigger and better and knows all. And he knows the future. He knows the past. There's nothing beyond his thought process or his control. And he's finally backed up. And instead of looking at his present circumstances, he's just looking at his God who's got this. This is why, Pastor said this morning, we don't need to have anxiety. We don't need to fear. What if COVID gets me? Listen, if God means for us to die by COVID, we're going to die by COVID. If he wants a bus to run over us, a bus is going to run over us. Well, if I never come out of my house, then a bus can't run me over. We'll see about that. Go ahead, test God. Try and mess with his plans. That's kind of what he's stating here. He's got the plan. Why are we questioning it? He's got it all together. Instead, this. Be still and know that I am God. This December, you're going to have some opportunities to be still and know that he is God, because your schedule just got cleared. Maybe that's the point. You think we would have gotten it the first time, right? And yet sometimes we need a refresher really quick. What's your response? Let's pray. God, thank you so much for all that you've done here and what you're going to do through this. And God, you're way bigger and better and more awesome than what we are. And we love you. Help us to act that out. Help us to live it. God, help us to rest in you. There's so much here. It's probably hard to process it all. But really, we should just stand back and be amazed. God, we love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen. Just take a